The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, these NBA playoffs, they just keep chugging along. We already have our first team into the conference finals. So let's get right into the NBA playoffs, or the week of the NBA playoffs. Beginning with the Miami Heat versus the New York Knicks matchup. We had a game earlier this week, game four. Miami snuck away with that win, 109-101. Jimmy Butler had yet another great game, came back from his injury in the previous game. He dropped 27 points, 10 assists, and 6 rebounds. And then Bam Adebayo had a double-double as well. He had 23 points and 13 rebounds. And Miami really just dominated for most of the way. And they would end up going up 3-1 on this series. And then game five was earlier in the week as well. And this one, the Knicks actually did eke out the win. It kind of looked bleak there to start, but then they were able to get it going. And they got the win 112-103 to take the series back to Miami. Back to Miami. And right now, the Heat are up 3-2. In the previous game, Jalen Brunson, he really went off. He's pretty much been the driving force for this team all playoff long, actually all season long. But so far, he has not really had a bad game. He had 38 points, 9 rebounds, and 7 assists. Julius Randle finally had a solid game. He had 24 points. And then RJ Barrett, he's their dude. He's been that other guy who's had to step it up, and he had 26 points in that game. And then so game six is, of course, today, Friday. It's actually on right now. New York Knicks actually have the lead 15-14, but it's early. They just started first quarter. So we'll see what happens. Miami can close it out. They actually were pretty close to closing it out in the last game. It's just the Knicks were actually able to just keep it moving, and they were able to tread water throughout the rest of the game, and they did end up getting the win. And so we'll see if the Heat are able to close out the series tonight. And if they aren't, then Game 7 is going to be on Sunday. So we'll see what happens in that series. So far, the Knicks have been very unimpressive. And the Heat haven't been amazing. But hey, I mean, they were a play-in team, and here they are. They're looking to close out a team tonight. So good for them. All right, now moving on to the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors series. Earlier in Game 4, earlier in the week, the Lakers ended up getting the win 104-101. It was a very close game. It was a game where Lonnie Walker would step up big. They really needed some help from the bench, and they got it in this one. The Lakers would go up 3-1 on the series. Of course, in the win, Anthony Davis had a great game, 23 points, 15 rebounds. LeBron also had a solid game, 27 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. As I said, Lonnie Walker, he was the big dude. He really stepped it up in the fourth quarter, just was dropping dimes. He ended up getting 15 points. But then even in a loss, Steph Curry, he has been just as consistent as pretty much anybody in the playoffs. He has been really, he has also been the driving force for his team, the Golden State Warriors, and he had a triple-double in the loss. He had 31 points, 14 assists, and 10 rebounds. And then in Game 5, the Golden State Warriors absolutely blew out the Lakers, 121-106. Lakers are still up in the series 3-2. But unfortunately, Anthony Davis would get elbowed in the face. He would end up leaving the game. But even before he left the game, the Lakers just were not looking good at all. As I said, the Lakers are either really good or they really suck. So that's pretty much par for the course this week. And we'll see what happens in Game 6 is going to be tonight. And in the previous game, Steph Curry had yet another great game, 27 points, 8 assists. It was really Draymond Green. He came right out the gate, dropped a three. He was the first points on the board, dropping a three-pointer. He had 20 points and 10 rebounds, and he really was the driving force. He played great defense that night. And then, of course, Andrew Wiggins, he had a big game. He stepped it up as well. He had 25 points. As I said, game six is tonight. And we'll see if the Lakers are able to close it out or if Golden State's able to survive yet another closeout game, because they are the kings of the closeout. You can't beat them in the closeout game. So we'll see if the Lakers are able to close it out. My hopes are still not high for them, but we'll see what happens. Then moving on to the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics series. This series is just has just been back and forth. It kind of feels like neither team really wants to win, because it hasn't been one of those really epic battles, you know, kind of like in the first round between the Kings and the Warriors. This one's really just like one team really blows out the other team, or one team really just starts to fall apart. So earlier in the week, the 76ers got the win in Boston, 115 to 103. And Jason Tatum, he just disappeared in that game. But Embiid, he had a solid game. He had 33 points, 7 rebounds. Tyrese Maxey also had a great game, 30 points. James Harden had 17 points, 10 assists, and 8 rebounds. So they really had a good game. But then last night, they laid an egg. They were in Philadelphia. And they could have easily closed it out. It looked like they were going to close it out. I mean, the first half, It was pretty much Celtics all the way. But then the third quarter, the 76ers really got it going, and it looked like, okay, they're because, I mean, Jason Tatum could not drop he could not hit the hoop if he was shooting in the ocean. You know, he was just, it was so bad up until the fourth quarter. And then the fourth quarter hit, and Jason Tatum was like, whoa, wait a second. I'm a really damn good player, and I'm about to take over this game. And that's exactly what Jason Tatum did. He had 16 points in the fourth quarter, and the Celtics would end up getting the win, and the 76ers really faded. Like, this was on them. While Tatum had a great fourth quarter, they are the reason why he had a great fourth quarter. The 76ers just completely faded, and I kind of feel like this is a really bad loss for them that could potentially cost them Game 7 on Sunday night. So the Celtics did get the win, 95-86. Jason Tatum ended up with 19 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists. As I said, it was the fourth quarter for him. And Game 7 is Sunday night. We are all tied up here. This is for all the marbles. We'll see who really wants it. As I said, both teams have been very, very weird in their series, and they just, it feels like neither one of them wants to close it out, but somebody has to close it out on Sunday. So we'll see what happens there. And then the final series in the Western Conference semifinals is the Denver Nuggets versus the Phoenix Suns, and the Nuggets took care of business. And if you didn't know, now you should know that Nikola Jokic is a motherfucking beast. This guy, he talk about like playing great in the playoffs. Jokic has been money. First of all, in game five. Denver got the win, 118 to 102. They pretty much had the lead the entire way. Jokic had a triple-double, of course, 29 points, 12 assists, and 13 rebounds. And this would actually break the record for the most triple-doubles in playoff history. So now Jokic owns that, which is not shocking at all. But then last night, the Phoenix Suns, I don't think they were aware that last night was a closeout game for them. And Denver ran away with this game, 125 to 100. As a matter of fact, Denver has really just dominated everybody so far. And Jokic, once again, what do you think he had? A triple-double, 32 points, 12 assists, 10 rebounds. Jamal Murray, he has also been that second-hand guy right there, his right-hand man right there for Jokic. He had 26 points. And then KCP, he has been another guy who's really stepped it up for the Nuggets since they traded for him in the second half of the season. He dropped 21 points in this game. And the Denver Nuggets are the first team to move on to the conference finals. They are in the Western Conference Finals. They will be awaiting the winner of the Lakers versus the Golden State Warriors matchup. But Jokic, if you did not think, I mean, you could tell dude's pissed off he didn't win the MVP. Because he probably should have at this point. You know, I've been riding Embiid hard. I've felt like he had a great season, but Jokic is just money, and he can't be stopped. Like, even if he's got four dudes on him right now, he still can make it. He kind of reminds me of Tim Duncan. So it's just really because he's a silent killer. He just scores the points. He just gets out there and does his job, but you can't stop him. It's just the craziest thing to watch. And so I kind of feel like if you didn't know who he was, you better know that this dude is playing at a high level. He is a spectacular player, and he is a triple-double machine. And the Denver Nuggets are right in line to make it to the NBA Finals. And, you know, I really haven't believed in them all season. I've said it all season long. You know, they've been the top team out West when the playoffs began. Didn't believe in them. Even in this round, didn't really believe in them. I actually picked the Suns. And now the Nuggets have actually made me a believer. You know, Jokic is the real deal. And he is playing at another level right now. And like I said, he seems to be pissed off that he didn't win that MVP. So he's like, fuck that MVP. I want that championship. And so that's what it's looking like right now. And they're also playing, the Nuggets as a whole are playing great defense. As I said, Murray has really stepped it up as the right-hand man. Then some of their bench players are really starting to step in at the big points of the game and knock down the shots when they need to and make the big defensive plays when they need to. And I mean, they really suffocated both of their opponents in the first round and then in the second round against the Phoenix Suns, who aren't a chump team. They did kind of get in their own way, and then of course the injuries were there for them. But I mean, still, Durant and Booker were pretty much unstoppable, and Jokic, the one-man show, was able to take over, and the Denver Nuggets will be awaiting their opponent between the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. So the Western Conference Finals will either, I believe, kick off on Sunday, depending on what happens. If the Lakers close it out tonight, I believe they'll play on Sunday, and if not, then the Western Conference Finals begin at the beginning of next week. And then yesterday, we actually had a lot of NFL news. They dropped the 2023 schedule, so some of the highlights for the season that we have. I mean, of course, it's way, way, way too early to be making any type of predictions or anything, even though, of course, lots of people are at this current point in time. That's not what I'm doing. I'm just going to be highlighting some games that look like they will be interesting. Of course, beginning the season with Thursday Night Football on September 7th, usually the Super Bowl champion always is the home opener. And it's usually an exciting game. This year, not so much. I understand it to an extent, but not really. It's going to be the Detroit Lions at the Kansas City Chiefs. That is a total fucking snooze fest, if you ask me. That looks like we're going to have a 41-0 win of the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, I get it. The Detroit Lions are a surging team. We kind of, you know, with now that Aaron Rodgers has been traded away from the Packers, the NFC North is pretty much up for grabs at this point in time. I mean, the Vikings, they're still the same team for the most part as last year. But I mean, after that, it's like the Packers probably going to suck. Detroit had, you know, they made a bit of a run last year. I mean, they looked good for Detroit. So it's up in the air for them. And then the Bears, you don't know what's going to happen with them either. So, I mean, I feel like the NFL is kind of looking at the Lions as a team that can make the run this year and be that team. Well, not the season opener. The season opener should not be the Detroit Lions at the Kansas City Chiefs. You couldn't have picked a better matchup than that. I mean, that is just fucking whack that we're going to get that stupid matchup. I mean, hopefully the Lions give us a decent game, but that is a stupid matchup. And I already said, you know, I said it's too early to be making predictions right now, but like I said, 41-0 Kansas City in that one. I'm going with that at this point in time, unless Patrick Mahomes starts the season off injured. That's about what I'm going with right now, right there, because that is just a horrible matchup. But anyways, that's how we're starting the season off. And then in week one, the first Sunday Night Football matchup, of course, is going to be my Dallas Cowboys at the New York Giants. It kind of seems to be the normal way the Cowboys start the season off. We almost always start the season off against the Giants on Sunday Night Football. They gave us a reprieve last year. I know we started off the season against, we didn't start with the Sunday Night Football for once. So they were like, oh, we'll just get the Cowboys off that one year. And then they're like, oh, wait, no, we need the Cowboys because their fans watch and we get great ratings during the Cowboys game. So week one, Sunday Night Football, Dallas at the Giants. So that's a good matchup right there. And then also Monday Night Football, first Monday Night Football of the season is going to be on September 11th. Buffalo Bills at the New York Jets. This is, of course, the debut of Aaron Rodgers as the New York Jets quarterback. Buffalo Bills should still be one of the top teams in the league. Now they are, they have Aaron Rodgers now in their division, so they have to face him twice a year. So we get that right off the bat. A nice matchup right there. Unlike that crappy Thursday night football matchup between the Lions and the Chiefs. Then the Thanksgiving Day games, the three matchups will be the Green Bay Packers at the Detroit Lions, the Washington Commanders at the Dallas Cowboys, and the San Francisco 49ers at the Seattle Seahawks. Then, of course, this year we get a Black Friday game. It's going to be a mid-afternoon game. It's going to be the Miami Dolphins at the New York Jets. So yet another Aaron Rodgers game. As a matter of fact, it's kind of hilarious to see the Jets trade for Aaron Rodgers, and now they are in a ton of primetime slots. So it just goes to show one player what he can do for an organization. And no matter how much of a whiny baby Aaron Rodgers could be, he still is a Hall of Fame level quarterback. He, of course, wants to win. I don't doubt or question that he wants to win. He is 100% in beyond this season, because if you didn't see, he restructured his contract to free up a little bit more room this year so they could sign some players. And so he's moving some of his guaranteed money to next year. And so if you were questioning whether or not Aaron Rodgers is going to play next year, here, let me give you a little tidbit here on how you know he's playing next year. Aaron Rodgers is guaranteed $100 million next year. That's his signing bonus next year. Not his signing bonus, whatever bonus it is. He's moving some contract money around, but he gets $100 million next year. $100 million, straight up. Isn't that crazy? So if you thought this was going to be a one-year wonder thing for Aaron Rodgers, no. Even if this year sucks and he hates New York, he's got $100 million to play for next year. And I don't know about y'all, but I'm playing for that. Even if it's a horrible fucking year and shit goes south, he still has $100 million waiting for him next year. Guaranteed. This is not his salary. This is not, if you get injured, you don't get, no. He gets $100 million. Guaranteed. So, yeah. Aaron Rodgers, even though, like I said, he's a, could be an asshole. And no friend to the media or anything, but he's a pretty damn smart dude. And obviously that shows, since he has worked his way around getting paid $100 million next year. So, but it is funny to see how many primetime games now the Jets have due to the trading of Aaron Rodgers. Then this year we also have some Christmas Day games. We have a triple header. The majority of the games are actually going to be on Christmas Eve, but we do have a triple header on Christmas. So the first game is going to be the Las Vegas Raiders at the Kansas City Chiefs, the New York Giants at the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Baltimore Ravens at the San Francisco 49ers. Then, of course, the international games this year. The first one's going to be week 4, October 1st in London at Wembley Stadium. It's going to be the Atlanta Falcons at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Then week 5, October 8th. In London, in Tottenham Stadium, it's going to be the Jaguars again at the Buffalo Bills. So the Jaguars are going to be playing two consecutive games in London. Then week 6, it's going to be October 15th in London again, Tottenham Stadium, Baltimore Ravens at the Tennessee Titans. And then we get two Germany games this year, and this time it's going to be in a completely different city. Both of the games this year. Week 9, November 5th, is going to be in Frankfurt, Germany, the Miami Dolphins at the Kansas City Chiefs. Then week 10, November 12th, is also going to be in Frankfurt, Germany. That's going to be the Indianapolis Colts at the New England Patriots. I'd say out of all of those, the best matchup's probably going to be the Dolphins at the Chiefs. If you look at the teams, how they were last year. Now, of course, it's really difficult to gauge what any team's going to look like at this point, because nobody's played shit and we're still, you know, working our way through. We haven't even hit training camps yet. So we still have a lot of way to go. But I feel like if we're just basing off of last year's teams, kind of the potential of what could happen this year, the Dolphins at Chiefs is probably going to be the best matchup out of all the international ones. The Jaguars always, they're basically like London's NFL team because they always go there every year. But they're going to be playing two consecutive weeks there. So I'm sorry, London, that you just keep getting the Jaguars. That's just, that's an awful team that you have to get. But that's just how it goes when your owner is, I believe he owns Wembley Stadium, if I remember correctly. I know he owns like a soccer team out there and everything. So he's very big in the London scene. And like I said, I'm almost positive he owns Wembley Stadium. And so, of course, that's why the Jaguars usually play there. But also, they're one of the, they don't have a big fan base. Because one of the things about the international games is you give up, if you're the home team, you actually give up a home game, which means you're giving up revenue for that game. And a lot of teams don't want to do it. That's why you don't usually see the Cowboys over there a lot. You don't usually see the Patriots or the San Francisco 49ers or the Eagles, the teams that have huge fan bases that consistently make money here in and out. Of course, you want the NFL as a whole wants to send them over there. But I mean, usually that's why we always get the Jaguars over in London, because they don't have a big fan base, and I mean, they've kind of, like I said, they've kind of turned into the London Jaguars at this point. And then the final game of interest, I would say, is the Super Bowl rematch between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs. That's going to be a Monday night affair on November 20th in Kansas City. So that is the Super Bowl rematch. There's, of course, a whole bunch of other really good games, potential games. But I mean, like I said, it's way too early to even judge or gauge what's going to happen next season, because there's injuries, there's just crappy seasons, there's just a lot that goes on. So you never know what's going to happen. But that's what we're looking at right now, because, you know, it's May and we still have a couple months till training camp. So when you're talking football, there's few and far between. And now that the schedule has been set, that's pretty much it for the NFL for until training camp. It's pretty much the dead man zone. Of course, there's going to be free agency signings and all that, but pretty much it's going to be some OTAs here and there. Yeah, it's going to be a quiet time if you're an NFL fan right now. All right, so let's move on to the top 10 list this week. As you may know, if you've been following along or listening along, that I've been doing my greatest of all time lists in each and every sport. And so I only have one sport remaining. And since, you know, I saved the best for last because football is my favorite sport of all time. I've been watching it my entire life. So I'm an extreme aficionado on this. So I knew this was going to be the easiest of all my GOAT lists because I know football like nothing. There's nothing else in the world. It's just, that's what I know. But so I saved the best for last, but also, you know, it coincides with the schedule release of the NFL. So let's get to my top 10 greatest football players of all time. You know, as I've mentioned before, championships matter the most to me. And every player in the top 10 greatest football players of all time, every one of them has at least one Super Bowl ring. But the majority of them have multiple Super Bowl rings, as they should, because especially in football, you know, as I said, in baseball, it's a little bit different because baseball, for the most part, is a numbers game. When you achieve certain numbers, that's really what makes you a GOAT. Championships help, but it's really mostly about numbers in baseball. But every other sport, to me, championships are what matter 100%. And they matter to me in baseball as well. It's just that there's different rules when it comes to baseball. When it comes to all the rest of the sports, I start at championships and work my way on down. So every player on this list has a championship. So I'm sorry to all you like Dan Marino fans and just other players who weren't as successful when it came to the postseason. Sorry, that's what matters most. So all these guys, they have Super Bowl rings. They were also, some of them, especially like the top four, they are 100% the greatest player at that position. So we have like game-changing, like the greatest at their position players. But then I also have just game changers, dudes who at their time who were the guy or who just their team revolved around and they were basically the heartbeat of their team. Or just they were just they were just amazing players. So I'm sure some people, because, you know, all these greatest of all time lists, everybody likes to argue over them. In my opinion, it's like, these are just opinions. Opinions don't actually really matter. And if you just enjoy players, that's cool. I know all of our lists are different. But I do know for a fact that there's going to be a couple players who are on the list, and so, where some are ranked, that people are going to be upset with, or who I didn't include, because there are players, like, for example, I didn't include Walter Payton, which was really difficult for me to do. I wanted to, but once I got down to like 8, 9, and 10, it was more difficult to start ranking players, and I really wanted to include Walter Payton because I think he's one of the greatest running backs of all time, but it's just that I feel like there's other guys above him who have accomplished more. Yes, he made a great impact on the game. Hell, he definitely would be in my top 15. He probably would have actually been like 11 or 12. This is my list, and these are my opinions, and if you have a problem with it, well, you can suck a fat dick. Doesn't matter. They're just opinions. But anyways, let's get started with my top 10 greatest football players of all time, beginning with number 10. Deion Sanders played cornerback from 1989 to 2000, and then also came back in 2004 and 2005. He played with the Atlanta Falcons, the San Francisco 49ers, my Dallas Cowboys, the Washington Redskins, and the Baltimore Ravens. He is the only athlete to play in a World Series and a Super Bowl. Just the thing about Deion Sanders is he was a game changer. In my opinion, he is the greatest cornerback of all time. He was so versatile. It wasn't even just cornerback that he played great. I mean, he played wide receiver well. He was an excellent kick returner. He was an excellent punt returner. He was a ball hawk. You just couldn't get around Deion Sanders. He was just such an amazing cornerback and just an amazing all-around player that I just feel like you can't not include him. At least I can't not include him in my top 10 just because he was one of my favorite players, hands down. But I mean, his impact on the game was something else. I mean, if you watched Deion Sanders, he was in like every commercial. He was basically the start of the flashy player. Like, you see all the dudes nowadays who care so much about the way they look and all that shit. That started with Deion Sanders. He was the first flashy motherfucker to walk in the building. He was way more cool about it. The dudes these days, some of them are such fucking posers, and you can tell. Neon Deion was exactly who he presented himself to be. And he was just a great player. He's a two-time Super Bowl champion. He won Super Bowl 29 with the San Francisco 49ers and then signed with the Dallas Cowboys the next year and won Super Bowl 30 with them. He was NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 1994. He's a six-time first-team All-Pro. He's two-time second-team All-Pro. He's an eight-time Pro Bowler. He has NFL kickoff return yards leader in 1992. He was part of the NFL 1990s All-Decade Team. He was a part of the NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team. He, of course, is a Hall of Famer. As a matter of fact, every guy on this list is a Hall of Famer. He was also on the All-Rookie Team in 1989. And then when you take it back to when he was in college, he played for Florida State. He was a Jim Thorpe Award winner in 1988. He was also a two-time unanimous All-American in 1987 and 1988. His career stats in pro football, total tackles, 512, 53 interceptions, 1,331 interception yards, 2,199 punt return yards, 3,523 kick return yards, and 22 total touchdowns. And I have mentioned this before on the show, but one of the greatest Deion Sanders moments of all time was a Monday Night Football game when he played for the Dallas Cowboys. He pretty much played every position besides quarterback that night. And Jason Garrett, by the way, because he was the backup quarterback, Troy Aikman was injured, so Garrett was in the game. And this was a Monday Night Football game, and Deion Sanders went off. He had a punt return for a touchdown. He had an interception return for a touchdown. He had a big reception at wide receiver where he set up the Cowboys to score yet again. And then I believe he had a kickoff for a touchdown as well. If it wasn't for touchdown, he did end up just having a great game. But all around, it's called the Deion Sanders game because he pretty much just dominated this game. Cowboys, of course, won that game. But that's one of the reasons why he had to make the list, in my opinion, just because he was such a game changer. He was such a game breaker. And he did change the game. I mean, like I said, he was the first, like, real flashy motherfucker. And now he's coaching in college football. And he did a great job with Jackson State. He's signed his first year this year is going to be in Colorado, so we'll see what he's able to do with them. But Deion Sanders to me is a legend, and he absolutely is in my top 10. Then at number 9 on my top 10 greatest football players of all time, I know this is going to be upsetting to people. I don't know why this guy's so upsetting to people. Well, actually, I do know why, because it's the team he played for. If he didn't play for the Dallas Cowboys, let's say Emmitt Smith played for the San Francisco 49ers, everybody would just bow down to him, because for some reason, when you're a Cowboys player, everybody likes to make up all the loser excuses they possibly can to make it seem like the Cowboys of the 90s didn't have the greatest players of all time. They all like to talk down that Emmitt Smith had the greatest offensive line of all time. Certainly did, but apparently you didn't watch Emmitt Smith's career in college and high school, because guess what? The motherfucker still owns records then. And also, watch a game, stupid. It's not just the offensive line. Yeah, they set up plays, but you got to be able to make the plays after. You know what I'm saying? And then people always like to talk down Michael Irvin and Troy Aikman and Charles Haley and Darren Woodson and all these other phenomenal players, but you talk it down. They got 3 rings and y'all can suck a motherfucking dick. And Emmitt Smith is number 9 on my top 10 greatest football players of all time. Everybody wants to talk about Barry Sanders. Well, guess what? Barry Sanders ain't got no rings. Barry Sanders performed horribly in playoff games, the like 5 playoff games that loser played in. He was a great, fun, fantastic running back to watch, but he was a fucking loser who never won shit. Emmitt Smith was the exact opposite. By the way, owns a whole bunch of records too. So let's get started with Emmitt Smith, because I know some people are dumping their diapers right now. You didn't include Walter Payton, but you got Emmitt Smith. Fuck yeah, I got Emmitt Smith on here. Emmitt Smith played running back from 1990 to 2004, mostly with the Dallas Cowboys, of course, but unfortunately he did play with the Arizona Cardinals for a little bit of time. I remember when Roy Williams, was the safety of the Dallas Cowboys, actually broke Emmitt Smith's collarbone in a game. It was a great hit, and it's the one time I was like, oh, sorry, Emmitt, get the fuck out of here. But regardless, Emmitt had an amazing career as a Dallas Cowboy. He was obviously, everybody played their role on this 90s team, but he was what made the engine roar. He was what made them chug. He was what made them go. Because the year they won Super Bowl 27, when they won Super Bowl 28, he actually held out at the beginning of that year. And then the Cowboys, you know, they started off the season horribly with 0-2 because he was holding out for a bigger contract. And then as soon as Emmitt Smith comes in, all of a sudden the Cowboys start winning. It's just really odd. But like I said, great players on this team at every position. This was one of the stacked-ass all-star teams you will ever see in football. Emmitt Smith was the leader of the pack. And so that's why, actually, out of all, Deion Sanders, of course, played for the 90s Cowboys team. But, I mean, at the end, he was only a part of, like, Super Bowl 30 in the end. Emmitt was a real Cowboy triplet. like I said, this is who the team revolved around. So Emmitt Smith is a 3-time Super Bowl champion. He was the Super Bowl MVP of Super Bowl 28. You know, that year that he held out. The Cowboys, he also had an MVP that year, too. It's really weird. Yeah, he just was a fantastic player. But a lot of people like to just talk down on him because, you know, he had a great offensive line. You know, something that happens to every championship team. You can't find... as a matter of fact, all 10 of these guys on my list, on my top 10 greatest football players of all time, believe it or not, they had other players on the team who were just as great as them, who were Hall of Fame players. It's just some of these guys were better, but they all played on great teams. But Emmitt Smith, he did run behind one of the greatest offensive lines of all time, but he still had to make a bunch of plays. Back to the great accolades of the great Emmitt Smith. He was the NFL MVP in 1993, NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year in 1990, 4-time first-team All-Pro, 2-time second-team All-Pro, 8-time Pro Bowler, 4-time NFL rushing yards leader, three-time NFL rushing touchdowns leader, NFL scoring leader in 1995, NFL 1990s all-decade team, but what would those voters know? He's an idiot who runs behind the greatest offensive line of all time. Barry Sanders is just so much better. NFL 100th anniversary all-time team. He was all-rookie team in 1990. And then, as I mentioned, he was an excellent college player as well. When he played for the Florida Gators, he was SEC Most Valuable Player in 1989. Sounds like a really shitty player. You know what I mean? The SEC Most Valuable Player, weird. And then he was also a unanimous All-American in 1989. Three-time first-team All-SEC from 1987 to 89. That's just really weird. But, you know, he ran behind that really good offensive line, so he doesn't deserve any credit at all, because it's all that offensive line. They did everything. They ran the football. They threw the football. It's that offensive line. Oh, yeah, the almighty offensive line. Oh, by the way, here are some NFL records that Emmitt Smith owns and not Barry Sanders. He owns the most career rushing yards, which is 18,355. By the way, that's a record that's probably never going to be broken. But you know what? Barry Sanders is way better than Emmitt Smith, right? Oh, that's right. The most career rushing touchdowns. Who has that record? Oh, Emmitt Smith does at 164. Also, who has the most career rushing attempts? Oh, that would be Emmitt Smith, 4,409. As I mentioned, those are all NFL records that still stand today. And that rushing yards one is going to stand for quite some time. That, because, you know, I thought Adrian Peterson, when I remember when he was drafted, I was like, that dude's probably the closest guy to being able to break it. No, Adrian Peterson didn't even fucking come close. Frank Gore, he got a little bit close. Nobody really expected him to, but, you know, he's up there now. Nobody's going to break that. And you can all suck a dick on that one, because you're going to be hearing the name Emmitt Smith forever and for always. And I know it's all about Barry Sanders, who, I'm not trying to diss Barry Sanders. Like I said, he was a fun, flashy player to watch, but he didn't win anything at all. And his playoff performances were horrible. Even if you're on the worst team, if you're supposed to be the greatest player of all time and you don't perform in the playoffs, you're not the greatest player of all time. Emmitt Smith was the exact fucking opposite. Emmitt even owns playoff records as well. So there you go. And then, of course, his career, Emmitt Smith's career, rushing yards, 18,355. Career rushing average, 4.2 yards per game. Career rushing touchdowns, 164. Career receptions, 515. Career receiving yards, 3,224. And career receiving touchdowns, 11. I know some of y'all are upset, because how dare I put Emmitt Smith up there. But you can talk all the shit you want about Emmitt Smith, but there are nothing but stats to back up. Emmitt Smith is one of the greatest of all time, and you can sit around and make up all the whiny baby loser excuses you want. But you know what? Let's talk about, like, Thurman Thomas, another guy who at that time was a loser when it came to the playoffs. As a matter of fact, there was one year, I believe it was Super Bowl 27, when Troy Aikman, who was never known for running, he had more rushing yards than Thurman Thomas, a running back, who everybody thinks is one of the greats of all time, too. Some people think he's better than Emmitt Smith. Well, guess what? Troy Aikman had 11 whole rushing yards, and Thurman Thomas had less than that in a Super Bowl. So tell me again why Emmitt Smith is not one of the GOATs of all time. Oh, because of that offensive line. Shut the fuck up, stupids. If you don't think Emmitt Smith is one of the best, greatest of all time, you don't have to consider him the greatest running back of all time. But if you don't put him in your top five running backs, you're stupid, you don't know shit, and you should probably just gouge your own fucking eyeballs out and stop watching football, because you don't know shit. You're just a Cowboys hater, which I get it. I get it. It sucked having to watch us kick your asses all those years. But guess what? We suck now. You should just be happy and enjoy. You ain't got to make up excuses as to why Emmitt Smith is, quote, not the greatest of all time, or wasn't that great. He wouldn't have been that great without an offensive line. Well, how great would have Joe Montana been without Jerry Rice? Or how great would have Peyton Manning been without some of the receivers that he had along the way, the Reggie Waynes and stuff? Mean Joe Green, who's actually the next guy on my list here, he had a whole slew of players, not only on the defensive side of the ball, but on the offensive side of the as well. But Mean Joe Green is still one of the greatest players of all time. So with that being said, at number 8 on my top 10 greatest football players of all time, I have Mean Joe Green. Defensive tackle, played from 1969 to 1981. He only played with one team, and that would be the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was the leader of this 1970s Pittsburgh Steelers team, one of the most feared, one of the greatest defenses you will have ever seen. They just had killers at every position, but Mean Joe Green was the leader of the pack. He is a four-time Super Bowl champion. He is two-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 1972 and 1974. He was the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year in 1969. He was the NFL Man of the Year in 1979. Five-time first-team All-Pro. Three-time second-team All-Pro. 10-time Pro Bowler. He was NFL 1970s All-Decade Team. NFL 75th Anniversary All-Time Team. NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team. Pittsburgh Steelers All-Time Team. And when he played for the North Texas Mean Green, yeah, that was his college team. He was a consensus All-American in 1968. So even when he played for the North Texas Mean Green, Mean Joe Green, come on, man. Even when he played there, he was excellent. And his career stats, games played, 181. Games started, 172. He had 77.5 career sacks, 16 fumble recoveries, and one interception. And like I said, this guy was one of the most feared defenders of all time. He was the leader of this pack. And it's funny, like I said, nobody holds it back. Nobody holds it against him that he was on a good team. Now they do with Terry Bradshaw, which for the record, I think is fucked up and stupid because in my opinion, Terry Bradshaw is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Not just because he's got four Super Bowl rings. He was a first overall pick, people. And while he had his ups and downs, he was still a good quarterback. But you know, people like to hold that against you if you actually had a good team around you, which every championship winning team has. That's why it's called a team. But nobody holds that against Joe Green, but that's because he was mean and he probably would kick your ass. All right, then at number 7 on my top 10 greatest football players of all time, the ranking I feel like is going to upset some people because I think most people would have him a little bit higher on their list, but I don't. Now, he is great, he is excellent, but you know what I held against him? Some of his playoff performances. Now, he does have Super Bowls, but he's lost a couple Super Bowls. And there's been some real stinkers from this guy in the playoffs. But overall, it's really difficult to not mention the impact this guy had on the game. And so at number 7 on my top 10 greatest football players of all time, I have Peyton Manning. Quarterback from 1998 to 2015. He played for the Indianapolis Colts and the Denver Broncos. And I mean, with Peyton Manning, he 100% changed the game. The way offenses are played nowadays is because of Peyton Manning. I mean, nobody really walked in and called plays at the line the way he did. Nobody kind of created the schemes he did. He really was able to just command that offense and do whatever he wanted with it in whatever offense he was in, because this is, you know, with the Colts, they let him take over, but the Broncos did as well. And he kind of had, two separate careers, if you will, because when he went and played with the Broncos, we all basically thought it was over for him, and then he goes on and has an MVP year. As a matter of fact, a record-breaking MVP-type year where he just broke nothing but touchdowns, for most touchdowns in a season and passing yards in a season, and it's phenomenal. And once I get to those stats, because you know I'm going to get to them, it's crazy to think that somebody at his age who had gone through what he had gone through, you know, he had those two neck surgeries and basically, the Colts let him go because they thought his career was over. He went and signed on with the Broncos and would basically go on to, have, a good end of his career with them. Now his last season, of course, was not good. It was very injury riddled. He did end up winning the Super Bowl, so he would technically go out on top, but it was not a good year for Manning. But overall, it's really difficult to overlook Peyton Manning's impact on the game. You know, like I said, I feel like he's just the stat king, But when it came to some of his playoff performances and one of his Super Bowls, most in particular when he played with the Broncos, that was his MVP year. That was when he broke a ton of records of passing yards and touchdowns. And the Seattle Seahawks came right in and made him look like one of the worst quarterbacks of all time. So that's what I mean is, like, he didn't just lose some of these playoff games or Super Bowls. He got his ass kicked, and he in particular did not have a good game. Whereas, like, for example, in the Super Bowls that Tom Brady has lost, I mean, one of them, he actually broke a record for most passing yards in a game, in the one where they lost against the Eagles. So, I mean, even though Tom Brady's lost a couple of Super Bowls, he still performed in those Super Bowls, whereas Peyton Manning looked very, very irrelevant in a few of the playoff losses. But overall, I mean, Peyton Manning is a GOAT. He, like I said, changed the game for the better as well. And he's got a long, long list of accomplishments. So let's start off with, he is a two-time Super Bowl champ. He won one with the Colts, one with the Broncos. He was the Super Bowl MVP when he won with the Colts. He is a five-time NFL MVP. So, I mean, that alone is a huge deal. Only he and Aaron Rodgers have won that many. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is, I think Aaron Rodgers is at four, right? So there you go. Peyton Manning's got the most MVPs. He won in 2003, 2004, 2008, 2009, and 2013. He was a two-time NFL Offensive Player of the Year, NFL Comeback Player of the Year in 2012, Walter Payton Man of the Year in 2005, 7-time first-team All-Pro, 3-time second-team All-Pro, 14-time Pro Bowler, 3-time NFL passing yards leader, 4-time NFL passing touchdowns leader, 3-time NFL passer rating leader, 2-time NFL completion percentage leader. He's on the NFL 2000s All-Decade Team, NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team. He was on the All-Rookie Team in 1998. He's a 30-time Burt Bell Award winner. He's also been the Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year in 2013. When you look back at his college career, he played with Tennessee and was an excellent college quarterback. He won the Maxwell Award in 1997, Johnny Unitas Golden Arm Award in 97, Davey O'Brien in 97, William Campbell Trophy in 97, SEC Player of the Year in 97, Consensus All-American in 97, First Team All-SEC in 97, and Second Team All-SEC in 1996. So, I mean, the dude's just been lighting it up his entire life because, of course, his father, Archie Manning, he played quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, so he basically was just grew up around football. And that's all he did was football, football, football. And that's why he's got so many stats and so many accomplishments. Here are a few of the NFL records he has set. As I said, that year with the Denver Broncos, 2013, I believe it was. 2013. That was when he won the MVP. That year, he set the record for most passing touchdowns in a season with 55. Then he also set that year the most passing yards in a season with 5,477. And this is when we were expecting Peyton Manning to be done. That's what he does when you say he's done. Nah. Now, he did not win the Super Bowl that year. He got trounced by the Seahawks, but still, amazing. And then he also has the most touchdown passes in a game with 7. He's got a shit ton of comebacks as well. He's got some of the greatest comebacks, and they were all in, like, prime time as well. Of course, their regular season. I think he did have one or two in the postseason. Here are some of his career stats. Career passing attempts, 9,380. Passing completion, 6,125. Completion percentage, 65.3%. 539 touchdowns, 251 interceptions, 71,940 passing yards, and a 96.5 passer rating. All right, and then at number 6 on my top 10 greatest football players of all time, Reggie White. Played defensive end from 1985 to 1988 and then made a brief comeback in year 2000. He played for the Philadelphia Eagles, the Green Bay Packers, and the Carolina Panthers. If you did not get to witness Reggie White, I am really sorry for you because this is one of the greatest defensive ends you will ever see play. This guy was so feared. He changed just the way offensive lines had to block. And even if you had two guys blocking him, it didn't matter. He mollywopped people. He took dudes with one hand and get out of here. And he was just a total gentle giant, too. He was known as the Minister of Defense because he was very religious, and he was really heavy into God. And I believe he actually was a minister post-career. So that was his nickname. But he so he was very soft-spoken guy. But, man, you get him on the field, and he was a force. He was a Super Bowl champion with the Green Bay Packers, two-time Defensive Player of the Year in 1987 and 1988, three-time NFC Defensive Player of the Year, 1987, 91, and 95, eight-time first-team All-Pro, five-time second-team All-Pro, 13-time Pro Bowler, two-time NFL sacks leader, NFL 1980s All-Decade Team, NFL 1990s All-Decade Team, NFL 75th Anniversary All-Time Team, NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team, and he also was excellent when he played in college as well. He played at Tennessee as right there with the, not with Peyton Manning, but he played at Tennessee just like Peyton Manning. He was first team all USFL in 1985, unanimous All-American in 1983, SEC Player of the Year in 1983, first team all SEC in 1983. And then here are some of the NFL records that Reggie White owns. Consecutive seasons with 10 plus sacks. He has nine of them. Then seasons leading league in sacks, two, which is now tied. And then consecutive seasons leading league in sacks with two, which is also tied with Mark Gastineau and TJ Watt. His career stats are tackles 1,112, sacks 198, forced fumbles 33, three interceptions, and two touchdowns. As I said, Reggie White was just a force on the defensive side of the ball. And we still haven't seen really anything like him at the defensive end position. All right, now at number five, I'm going to drop five greatest football players of all time. Joe Montana, quarterback from 1979 to 1994. He played with the San Francisco 49ers and the Kansas City Chiefs. This was Tom Brady before Tom Brady. This was, I mean, if Joe Montana, all Joe Montana did was win. In the pressure situations, he won. He was called Joe Cool for a reason, and that's just because in a couple of the Super Bowls he played in, he had just two of the most amazing comeback drives you will ever see, and they were within just like a minute or two. So like if you let, he was that dude who if you left too much time on the clock, kind of similar to the Peyton Mannings, the Tom Bradys, the Drew Breeses of recent years. Joe Montana started that gangsta shit. And he's undefeated in Super Bowls. He's a four-time Super Bowl champion. I mean, he was the leader of that dynasty team of the 80s of the 49ers. He's a three-time Super Bowl MVP, a two-time NFL MVP. He won the MVP in 1989 and 1990. NFL Offensive Player of the Year in 89. NFL Comeback Player of the Year in 86. Three-time first-team All-Pro, two-time second-team All-Pro, eight-time Pro Bowler, two-time NFL passing touchdowns leader, two-time NFL passer rating leader, five-time NFL completion percentage leader, and that's really the thing with Montana. He was so accurate, and he just did his job. He just went out there, he won, he passed the ball, he didn't have to do anything fancy, he just went out there and just completed passes and did an amazing job at it. He was on the NFL 1980s All-Decade Team, NFL 75th Anniversary All-Time Team, NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team, and he also had a great college career as well at Notre Dame. He was a two-time AP athlete. Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's for the pros. He was a two-time AP athlete of the year, but he was a national champion when he played for Notre Dame in 1977. His career stats, games, he played in 192 games, started 164 of them. He had 5,391 pass attempts, 3,409 pass completions. He had a 63.2 percentage, 273 touchdowns, 139 interceptions. He passed for 40,551 passing yards and a 92.3 passer rating. So Joe Montana, he just got the job done, and just he was always reliable when it came to the key moments, when it came to the Super Bowls, the playoff games. He was a part of the catch. You know what I'm saying? Like this guy, he's one of the greatest of all time, and he pretty much was considered the greatest quarterback of all time. And I mean, you could still make an argument for him over Tom Brady, but I mean, in my opinion, Brady's completely above everybody just because of how many Super Bowls he has and how long his career lasted. And I mean, Joe Montana's career, especially towards the end of it with the 49ers, there were times where the coach really wanted to put in Steve Young over him. And it's like, dude, you have a guy who's here winning. And not that Steve Young was one of the greatest of all time as well. But this is Joe Montana we're talking about. So a lot of his career was kind of fucked over because they kept taking him out of the game and putting Steve Young in. All right, now we're at the top four here. And as I said when I started this, these are the best players at their position. And in my opinion, it's pretty much inarguable with all of them. So let's get to number four on my top 10 greatest football players of all time. That would be Jim Brown, who I think is the greatest running back of all time. He played from 1957 to 1965. He only played for the Cleveland Browns. And you'll say to yourself, the Cleveland Browns? Yeah, this is when the Browns were actually good. Once Jim Brown left, they pretty much have been a piece of crap team ever since. Now, they won when this was before it became the NFL that it is today, before they merged together. So he didn't actually technically play in any Super Bowls, but he is an NFL champion. So like I said, that was pre-Super Bowl era. So he actually won an NFL championship in 1964. He is a three-time NFL MVP in 1957, 1958, and 1965. He was NFL Rookie of the Year in 1957. Eight-time first-team All-Pro, second-team All-Pro, nine-time Pro Bowler, eight-time NFL rushing yards leader. Yeah, eight times. Five-time NFL rushing touchdowns leader, NFL scoring leader, NFL 1960s all-decade team, NFL 50th anniversary all-time team, NFL 75th anniversary all-time team, NFL 100th anniversary all-time team. And then, of course, when he played in college as well at Syracuse, he was a unanimous All-American in 1956, third-team All-American in 1955, and he also played multiple sports as well. His career stats as a football player, rushing yards, 12,312, which actually he was the first all-time leading rusher, and Walter Payton would end up breaking that, and then Emmitt Smith would end up breaking Walter Payton's. So Jim Brown really started this shit. He's the only running back ever to average 100 yards every year of his career, and I believe average 100 yards per game as well. Like, this guy, that's all he did was run, and he was the perennial player for the Browns at this time. His career rushing average, 5.2 yards per rush. Rushing touchdowns, 106, 262 receptions with 2,499 receiving yards and 20 receiving touchdowns. All right, and then at number three on my top 10 greatest football players of all time, Lawrence Taylor, linebacker from 1981 to 1993, played for the New York Giants his entire career. And if you don't know and if you don't understand, Lawrence Taylor is literally the greatest defensive player of all time. He was something else. I mean, nobody made an impact like this guy on defense. You could honestly make an argument for him to be the greatest football player of all time. I couldn't put him above my two because there's reasoning why I have the two at the top, and it's just their work ethic, and just they really worked hard. But Lawrence Taylor was just a pure talent, and he was one of the most feared players on the field. He is a two-time Super Bowl champion. He is an NFL MVP in 1986. By the way, that was a unanimous choice. The only unanimous MVP ever, Lawrence Taylor. Three-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year, NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year in 1981, eight-time first-team All-Pro, two-time second-team All-Pro, 10-time Pro Bowler, NFL Sacks Leader in 1986, NFL 1980s All-Decade Team, NFL 75th Anniversary All-Time Team, NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team, two-time NFC Player of the Year, and he was also on the All-Rookie Team in 1981. And then he was also a phenomenal college football player as well when he played for the North Carolina Tar Heels. He was a unanimous All-American in 1980 and then ACC Player of the Year in 1980. His career stats, tackles 1,089, sacks 142, forced fumbles 54, and 9 interceptions. All right, now we're at the number two on my top 10 greatest football players of all time. The reason why this guy is number two, he is one of the hardest workers ever. And that guy is Jerry Rice, wide receiver from 1985 to 2004. He played with the San Francisco 49ers, the Oakland Raiders, and the Seattle Seahawks. But, I mean, if you ever want to see somebody who exemplified hard work, it was Jerry Rice. First of all, he was drafted out of a HBCU. And if you're not aware, not a lot of players get drafted out of HBCUs. And so not only was he drafted out of there, he was well sought after out of Mississippi State, but he became is just insane coming out of an HBCU. So that alone is huge, but it's just because of his hard work. I mean, if you have ever watched a Jerry Rice training video from back in the day, I mean, he would run for miles like hills. And it would just kill him. But, I mean, that's what you had to do because he was a wide receiver. You got to run. But then one thing he would do, because he had the greatest hands, I mean, just the purest, most beautiful catch you will ever see ever is Jerry Rice. And because one of the reasons why is because he would practice by catching bricks. He would have bricks thrown at him, not like from yards away, but like really close, kind of like you're just tossing back and forth. But, I mean, that's a good way to get your grip. That's a good way to just make sure you're paying attention and you don't drop the ball because you don't want to drop the brick. But, I mean, just his hard work, his work ethic was just, it was just above all. He is a 3-time Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP, 2-time NFL Offensive Player of the Year, 10-time first-team All-Pro, second-team All-Pro, 13-time Pro Bowler, 6-time NFL receiving yards leader, 2-time NFL receptions leader, 6-time NFL receiving touchdowns leader. Let me also just mention, too, Jerry Rice actually played in an era when cornerbacks could beat the crap out of you. There are so many games Jerry Rice played in that he would be just pushed down, get up, pushed down, get up, pushed down, get up, and he'd still make the big play down the field. And, I mean, he still has all these stats, and he played in one of the most difficult eras you could ever play in. Nowadays, you can barely, if you touch a dude past 5 yards, the flag is thrown. That shit didn't happen to Jerry Rice. Like I said, dude got thrown down all the time, still made the big plays. He was the NFL scoring leader in 1987, NFL 1980s All-Decade Team, NFL 1990s All-Decade Team, NFL 75th Anniversary All-Time Team, NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team, All-Rookie Team in 1985, and then when he played in college, he was actually a 2-time First Team IAA All-American 1983 and 1984. Here are some of the NFL records that Jerry Rice owns. Most career receptions, 1,549. Most career receiving yards, 22,895. Most career receiving touchdowns, 197. Most career total touchdowns, 208. And most career all-purpose yards, 23,546. His career NFL stats, receptions, 1,549, receiving yards, 22,895, receiving yards average, 14.8, and receiving touchdowns, 197. As I said, Jerry Rice just was one of the hardest workers of all time. He was such a fun receiver to watch, and he played for the 49ers, a team that was against my Cowboys, and you didn't really want to see him win, but honestly, he was just difficult to root for, and he was just such a hard worker, and it's crazy, too, because he went on to play with the Raiders, which was just weird to see him in a Raiders jersey. As a matter of fact, my first football game I ever saw in person was a preseason game against Dallas Cowboys versus the Oakland Raiders. And I had great seats, too. I was at the 50-yard line. I think I was like in the fifth row, like seventh row, something like that. But it was on the Raiders sideline. Now, I'm a Cowboys fan, but I saw Jerry Rice walk out of the tunnel, and I was like, holy shit, that's Jerry Rice. And he was, like, right in front of me, like, the whole time. It was, like, the coolest thing ever. I just remember every time he walked by, Jerry Rice. Oh, my God, that's Jerry Rice. Oh, look, that's Jerry Rice. I got excited about Tim Brown, too, but Jerry Rice is something else. And he actually used to be ranked number one for me as my greatest football players of all time. But then this guy named Tom Brady came around, and in my opinion, it's really difficult to not rank him number one. Obviously, quarterback from 2000 to 2022, just retired this year, played for the New England Patriots and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, This is just another guy who just exemplifies hard work. Sixth round pick, wasn't supposed to be shit. Just really got a lucky break by Drew Bledsoe getting injured. He stepped right in, played well, and just really has been the epitome of hard work right alongside Jerry Rice. That is why the two of them are at the top for me, because they came from pretty much nothing and they weren't really expected to be much. Now, Jerry Rice, he was expected to be a good receiver, but nobody expected him to be one of the greatest ever. But that's why they're up here. But Tom Brady supplanted him, of course, because he is a seven-time Super Bowl champion. He's been to 10 Super Bowls and won seven. He's a five-time Super Bowl MVP, three-time NFL MVP in 2007, 2010, and 2017. NFL Offensive Player of the Year, NFL Comeback Player of the Year in 2009, three-time first-team All-Pro, three-time second-team All-Pro, 15-time Pro Bowler, five-time NFL Passing Touchdowns Leader, four-time NFL Passing Yards Leader, two-time NFL Passing Rating Leader, NFL Completion Percentage Leader, NFL 2000s All-Decade Team, NFL 2010s All-Decade Team, NFL 100th Anniversary All-Time Team, AP Athlete of the Year, two-time Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year. He also won a national championship when he played with Michigan in 1997. Now let's talk about a couple of the records that Tom Brady owns, because, of course, the thing about Tom Brady is he owns so many goddamn records, you can't discuss all of them. So here are a few of them. Most career quarterback wins, 251. Most career passing attempts, 12,050. Most career passing completions, 7,753. Most career passing touchdowns, 649. Most career passing yards, 89,214. Most pass completions in a season, 490. Most pass attempts in a season, 733. And the longest touchdown pass of 99 yards. And then his career NFL stats, passing attempts, 12,050, passing completions, 7,753, completion percentage, 64.3%, 649 touchdowns, 212 interceptions, 89,214 passing yards, 97.2 passer rating, 1,123 rushing yards, and 28 rushing touchdowns. And that just is tip of the iceberg with Brady. Like I said, it's really impossible, because also the longevity of his career. He did things that nobody has ever done. He was able to be a winner his entire career. And I'm sorry, that puts you at number one on my list. Not just the Super Bowls, but he won at every level. He did everything right. There are literally no arguments against Tom Brady being the greatest of all time. Like I said, Jerry Rice used to be until Tom Brady won, like, once he got to seven for sure, but I think even before that, I already ranked him above Jerry Rice just because he owns everything and he's going to own many, many records until the end of time. And I don't think we're ever going to see anything like Tom Brady ever again. So that's why he's number one. So my top 10 greatest football players of all time. Again, number 10, Deion Sanders. Number 9, Emmitt Smith. Number 8, Mean Joe Green. Number 7, Peyton Manning. Number 6, Reggie White. Number 5, Joe Montana. Number 4, Jim Brown. Number 3, Lawrence Taylor. Number 2, Jerry Rice. And number 1, Tom Brady. So there you have it, people. I have finished all of my GOAT lists. Get upset about them, agree with me, disagree. I couldn't give two shits in the fuck, because they're just opinions and they don't matter at all. I didn't win any of those championships. I got $0 and 0 cents from even giving those opinions. So who the fuck cares? They're just opinions. But it's really hilarious to see the reaction to some sports fans when you don't say things that they like. It's amusing. But anyways, those are my GOAT lists. I have completed the all times. I of course, over time, I'm sure I will break down positions in other sports and all that. But now I have done all of my GOAT lists, and so yeah, there we go. Now we have the rest of the NBA playoffs. Right now, the Miami Heat are actually winning. They're leading the Knicks right now, 54-52 in the third quarter. So. We'll see what happens with that one. We'll see if Miami's able to close it out. By Monday's show, we should maybe see what's going on with the Western Conference Finals should be set. Eastern Conference Finals should be set. And we still have some baseball for the weekend. I didn't talk any baseball today just because I had a lot of NFL to cover and a lot of basketball to cover. So there you have it. So enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.